This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. And from Nashville, Tennessee, I'm your host, Gary Holt. And joining me in Missouri is Tina Mae Weber. Good morning, Tina Mae.
Good morning, Gary. How are you today?
I am doing very, very well. And I'm excited about our guest today. We have a lot of ground to cover. And so why
don't you
tell our audience who we have joining us today?
Well, today we have Randy Rasmussen with Backcountry Horsemen of America. Then we travel to Pineville, Missouri, and talk with Rick Bousfield, owner of Huckleberry Stables.
All right, so it is going to be a great show, and all of this is made possible by our great sponsors in the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that just love the equestrian and Western lifestyle. In the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net, and by our fine show sponsors, Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. You can learn more about Trail Guard at trailguard.org, and Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. Shop with them online at trailheadsupply.com. So grab a cup of coffee, take a deep seat, and join us. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Randy Rasmussen. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
He was the new kid on the circuit, gold buckles in his eyes. But the horse he drew was plenty rank, and much to his surprise, he did a double backflip, landed on his head. This old cowboy limped out in the ring, leaned over him and said, "You better cowboy up when you get thrown down. Get right back in the saddle as soon as you hit the ground. You've heard that the tough gets going when the going gets tough. But around here all we say is, son, you better cowboy up." By the end of last season, said he was among the best, so he proudly called the girl back home, hoping she would be impressed. But her mama said she married the guy he used to call his friend. And before the first tear could fall, these words came back again: "You better cowboy up when you get thrown down. Get right back in the saddle
and her great song Cowboy Up. And Joni will be joining us this Thursday at noon on the Campfire Cafe. But we are always pleased to have Randy Rasmussen joining us. Hi, Randy. Good morning, Randy.
Randy.
Good morning. Thank you.
How
good
are
morning.
You, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great here.
Great, great. Well, you know, just before we started the show, we were talking briefly about the fact that Backcountry Horsemen has been part of our family, and we're part of theirs for almost 2 years now. Time flies.
No, that's fantastic. I appreciate you want to involve Backcountry Horsemen of America that much in your radio shows and get the good word out about all the volunteer efforts that we're doing to keep trails open for everybody.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and of course Jim McGarvey, who's with us so often, and Alan Hill has been with us, and we were just talking before the show started about the fact that I think our very first show we probably had three of the chairmen that had joined us for that first one. So time just flies, and you have not gotten any older at all, Randy, in the last 2 years.
Thank you. Appreciate that. No, and our chairman cycle out every 2 years, so we've had some great leadership, and we'll continue to have so. But we'll be expecting a new chairperson at the end of this month as Jim McGarvey cycles out of BCHA. So you'll have more new guests to be on your show in the very near future.
Well, that is pretty exciting, and it's also encouraging to understand that I understand that Jim is going to remain as executive director for a while.
That's the good news. Jim McGarvey is not leaving us after his 2 years of chairman, which he's just excelled and you know, brought us to such a high level here. He's going to volunteer, and he and his wife Cindy will continue to be our web people that do our website and Facebook, and Jim's going to be the executive director and focus on fundraising and a number of things. I mean, the level of dedication of that couple is just amazing, so we get to continue to benefit from that as we get a new chairperson in and but we'll continue that great relationship that the McGarveys have given Backcountry Horsemen.
Well, that's pretty cool. We haven't even talked about this. Didn't really intend to go in this direction, but what, Randy, do you think are probably the biggest changes or maybe the greatest advances in BCHA in the last couple of years?
Well, I'd say we've gone up several rungs in being a professional national organization. I mean, we're a national nonprofit organization. We have a board of directors and bylaws and the whole bit. And services first and foremost about keeping trails open. What Jim McGarvey in particular has done and his predecessors have built the path is for us too is creating greater national partnerships where we can leverage our voices with other partners because we're just a small group in the scheme of things, but our numbers talk and our volunteers speak volumes in terms of the hours they put in. So it's the partnerships, and it's getting more strategic about where we focus our efforts and how we create opportunities for the packers and horsemen and how we strategically keep trails open without having to be in a reactionary mode each time we hear about a new trail closure or an agency that might have new policies. So we're getting more strategic and have a strategic plan. We've got a new revamp website, ideas on how to do crowdfunding and fundraising for the organization that we haven't done before. Just a neat package of things that allow us to be more focused and really more nimble in how we can respond and better serve our members and ultimately keep trails open. So that's been a progression through the last couple of chairmen, and we're really leagues ahead of where we were several years ago, I think, in that regard.
Yeah, you know, we've had Roland Cheek has been on and been one of my guests on one of the other shows. And, of course, Roland was one of the founding fathers of BCHA. And it's interesting when I talked with him and asked the question, you know, what's changed? And really, the issues haven't changed that much, but the way that you address them has changed tremendously, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, and I'm sure Roland's seen a huge transformation in the 41 years since he and others began the organization. But it's still the central premise is they formed in the Flathead Valley of Montana 41 years ago to say, hey, we can be a service organization. We can be different than just complaining and groaning about every change. We can be part of the system in that we can affect change and we can work on trails and partner with the agency and make things happen. That's still the thrust of this organization. But, yeah, how we do business and how broadly and how many states now we have under the umbrella of Backcountry Horsemen, 29 states, I'm going on 30 here very shortly with, 175 chapters. We're huge, and we can use that to our advantage and be a national group in scope and affect things on a national level. So, yeah, big transformation in those 40-odd years.
Big transformation, and of course, you know, it's important to our audience to be able to be involved and have a resource so that they can kind of keep up with what's going on for proposed things for our public lands and the trails that people love to get out and ride on. And I think that's one of the big advantages that we've had to have Backcountry Horsemen on, because we've been able to help address some of those things and help make people aware of what's going on and how they can become involved. You know, we've got a real interesting topic that we're going to address, and I know Tina May has her thoughts, and she's probably had some mm-hmm. feedback. I noticed she had posted some things out on Facebook last night mm-hmm. and this morning. But before we get into that, let's acknowledge one of our sponsors, and that is Trailhead Supply. Trailhead Supply is your full-service online horse packing supply store. With their storefront location in Kalispell, Montana, Trailhead Supply doesn't just sell packing supplies. They stand behind every product they sell, and they use them. Trailhead Supply is your online source for the very best in camping gear, horse packing equipment, and horse riding gear. You can shop with Trailhead Supply online at trailheadsupply.com. And Randy, we've got a little promotion that's going on right now that we want to tell people about, and that is a like our Facebook page. So I don't know if you've liked our Facebook page, but run over there and like that. And we're going to give away 2 tickets this month to see Templeton Thompson, Stephanie Lane, and the Sawdust Brothers in concert at Equestrian Legacy Radio's Trail Ride and Benefit for the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation. So we're going to have some great activities there. But if you visit our Facebook page and like it, you'll be automatically entered in the drawing for that concert on Friday night. So it's kind of cool. We like to be liked. I know Backcountry Horsemen of America likes to have their Facebook page liked. And so like our page, and you'll get free tickets to that concert on Friday night in Winchester, Tennessee, at the Circle E Guest Ranch. We're going to take a real quick break now, and we'll be back, and we're going to talk more with Randy and with Tina May, and talk about this topic that is becoming pretty hot across the country. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, online on our free mobile app and at equestrianlegacy.net.
Mountains.
Bob Arcy's Prairie Skies, and, you know, I think that's what we all enjoy is getting out under these open skies where we can see the stars and sit around a campfire and drink our cup of coffee and just kind of enjoy being out. And one of the things that we're all concerned with as trail riders are maybe challenges that might be coming up that we'll have to face about being able to do that, and maybe even able to do it where we would like and to be able to afford to do that. And one of the issues that is kind of a hot topic right now is what, Tina May?
If the public land should be owned by state or by federal government. We want to keep our trails open.
Kind of a hot topic, isn't it, Randy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's burning hot for the horsemen, absolutely. This is core to our mission about, you know, keeping trails open, you know, and being able to ensure that the public lands remain open to recreational stock use. So we very much have a stake in this current public policy debate that's going on right now.
Well, you have one of the best definitions of really explaining what's going on. So would you share that with us and with our audience?
Okay, well, you bet. This is a philosophical or public policy argument that circulates every few decades about whether the federal public lands as we know them, you know, our national forests and our in the western states, the Bureau of Land Management public lands in particular, are better managed by the federal government or the states. And it has been forever held, and ever since the states in the West have been granted statehood and accepted to the Union, that the federal government will retain control of a certain portion, and a large portion in many western states, of the federal or the public estate. And so there have been a number of times in history, the most recent in the 70s and 80s, called the Sagebrush Rebellion, when a number of interests, again, attempted to push as hard as they could to see if they could wrestle some of those federal public lands away from the feds and have them either managed or owned by the states. And that has failed over history for a number of reasons we could get into if you'd like. But it's resurfaced most recently here in the past year or so, and it certainly goes back several years just in the making of where we are now. But I guess why it seems to be a hot topic right now and such a threat in the view of the backcountry horsemen of America is that the leadership in both houses of Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate, the leadership that has oversight of the public lands in these committees, has both indicated their interest and desire to facilitate a transfer of federal lands in mass, in bulk, you know, large chunks of the federal estate to the states, and to begin that process of debate, appropriating money to study the issue and to go in that direction. So that's what has many of the outdoor groups up in arms, is that potential change and the focus that Congress now has on trying to make that transfer of ownership and management happen.
Why would the federal government even be considering this and doing studies for this? What would be the purpose for transferring federal lands back to the state? Because there was quite a fundraising effort years ago to acquire those state lands and make that part of the national park system. So why now a change to where they're considering that?
Well, I think it's always been a philosophy of certain members of Congress and of the public to want to see less federal government and less federal controls. You know, smaller government is good, that kind of philosophy. Transferred to a mega scale here when we're talking about millions and millions of acres of public lands. So I think there's always been that desire for more local control and decision-making on federal public land decisions. There's been angst and anxiety in how the federal agencies manage public lands and how rural communities oftentimes feel that their needs aren't being taken into account. So it's a number of things that are coming together, but I think the core of it gets down to just the desire of some people to have smaller government and more local control. In the conflict, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of us would like to see less federal control and involvement in some things, but when that transfer was made originally, the purpose for that was for Americans, wherever they are, whatever state they live in, to be able to appreciate and enjoy what would be national treasures. And there was some danger in that not being the case decades ago when those lands were transferred to the federal government and fundraising was made to purchase those lands. What is the danger now to trail riders in the lands reverting back to the state control?
Well, if Congress had acted, it does act, and the president does approve of legislation that would give large tracts of federal lands to the states, and I say large because there's always ongoing trades and back and forth, you know, the federal government disposes of land on a regular basis, but if it's done in mass like it's proposed, I guess the threat we're seeing as backcountry horsemen is instead of one agency like the Forest Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and a, you know, that there's going to be now 50 different ways of having to determine how we can access what was formerly public lands, and if indeed we can access those public lands at all anymore under state ownership. So every state handles their state-owned lands differently. Several of them in the West, as a condition of their statehood, were given large chunks, millions of acres in every Western state, to benefit the school trust, the public schools, let's say. And, you know, their number one priority is to generate revenue, generate money from those lands. Whatever, you know, recreation is way down low on the list of priorities for those state-administered public lands. And, in fact, even if they remain open to the public, there would probably be hefty fees levied by most of the states just to have access to those lands, because that's the mandate the states have for much of the Western estate there. So there's not only 50 different ways of figuring out how we can access public lands in each of the states, but probably some pretty you know, costly fees to have the privilege to do so, because at present, you know, it's a birthright of all the Americans to be able to go and largely, you know, recreate at will on your public lands. And so someone from the New England can travel to the West and be in the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming and enjoy their time there. They can also submit comment letters to the agency on how they should be managed. Well, if this system were in place where the states were managing the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming, for example, I don't think anyone in New England or the Southeast or Tennessee would have a voice in how they're managed at all. And that,
right,
again, is something the backcountry horses.
Well, what's stopping the federal government from doing that? And it seems to me that they are trying to take the horse trails away from us.
Well, I mean, you make a good point, Tina May. I mean, the federal government is far from perfect, and we have plenty of issues with how federal lands are managed with respect to horsemen and access. But I would much rather deal with that bureaucracy than 50 different ones that have a mandate, first and foremost, to make money. There's also the threat that if they – I'm sorry, go ahead, Tina May.
But, okay, when this comes back to the state, and I'll give you a good example. Here in Missouri, we've got the Scenic River Wave. The people – there's many people that earn their living because of those waterways and the horse trails. And the federal government are trying to come in here and take those away. And if it was brought back to the state – I believe that the people and the trail riders would have more control over who is governing those, that property, and what is best for the area and for the people that live in that state.
Hey, okay, so you're giving an example of where lands were formerly owned locally, and then now the federal government, because of a national waterways designation, has control. That is a unique and more difficult circumstance, and I'm kind of speaking more broadly about the Western states where the states never had control of these federal domain lands, technically, and now we're asking for them in whole. You've got some interesting issues in Missouri and the Scenic Riverways that, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any easy answers at the tips of my fingers for that situation. But I know at least in the 11 Western states out here, it would be a disaster because there is technically, in very few cases, any homeowners or people who we're used to a regime where the state or counties were in control, and that was changed in the recent, you know, 20, 30 years or so since you've had that national waterways designation.
Well, we've also
go ahead.
I've also got a comment for the supervisor of the Mount Rogers NRA, the Mount Rogers National Recreational Area. They're planning on closing over 200 miles of horse trails there. And so it seems like the West is a little different than the Central and the East. But, you know, which way is the best way for the people? Is it for them to control, you know, who is in office to fight for them to keep these things open?
So, well, no, I've heard of the Mount Rogers National Recreation Area and that situation there, and they're doing a plan and haven't formally authorized the number of trails, and now they're saying since they've never been authorized that unless they're going to be formally authorized and put into the system of trails that it would be technically illegal to ride on them. And that's an issue we have across the West. I mean, that happens here too. So that's something we share in common, and there's a number of things we can do to, you know, try to get a better resolution than just a couple hundred miles that, of trails that we used to enjoy now technically being off limits. There are ways to work that. I'd be more concerned if it was a state, and that's already happened in the Department of Conservation in Missouri, where they've had some changes in access proposals on the state level that we were pretty much powerless at BCHA to really influence or change, but our local chapters and the Show Me folks there are able to have better leverage because they know the state system. So, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, but the Mount Rogers National Recreation Area is a common kind of issue we're seeing throughout the nation too.
Okay. Well, my biggest concern, I mean, originally, you know, I'm for the states having it. And I know that y'all are on the other side of the fence on this. However, and it was brought up to my attention, it's something to think about. You know, when we think about the states owning these public lands so that we have more control, more voice into what happens with it through voting, then again, we also got to think about the big cities because that's where the population is in the big cities. And people in the big cities might not know anything about the National Scenic Riverways and how they make a life on the rivers or horse trails or anything else like that. So that would be my concern about the state having it, but I don't know.
You have the same situation that takes place when states control state parks and wildlife resources lands when they decide to eliminate horse riders in favor of hikers and bikers. And that's happened here mm-hmm. in Tennessee. So and that's the state controlling those lands. And I think the bigger picture is, you know, and I was talking about this the other day, if the state owns the land, they could decide to use that for gas or oil exploration. They could decide that they need to sell to private developers so that you could have condominiums in the Bob Marshall. You know, I mean, there are some challenges there when states become involved with what is our birthright as Americans, and that's to enjoy our national and federal lands.
Oh, that's absolutely how I feel too, Gary, in terms of, you know, again, the mandates from the states and how they would prioritize what occurs. I'll just give you an example. When the state of Nevada was granted statehood, this must have been in the mid-1800s, they relinquished, you know, any claim to the federal domain, with the exception of, and again, there's these land grants that the federal government made to keep schools and to fund schools. So Nevada got 2.7 million acres in their state to manage for the public trust. Well, Nevada has sold almost all of them, and out of 2.7 million acres, there's only 3,000 that remain in the state trust. The rest have been sold off to private
wow.
individuals, corporations, and I wouldn't be surprised that there are some global corporations that aren't even U.S.-owned that own large chunks of real estate in our country. And so that's the trend we've seen in the West. You know, Utah has just about as dismal as a record. They've sold over half of their original land grants from the feds. When, you know, mm. when times get tough economically, the easy thing to do is to say, well, let's just sell off the land. And, of course, once you do it, you never get it back. So that's the real threat is the not only would they no longer be public, but they could be privatized, fenced off, and the places we go down and enjoy in the back country and front country are now fenced off, you know, no trespassing. So that's
yep.
really what has a lot of us concerned.
Well, there's a lot of debate. I had posted something on Facebook and asked for some comments a couple of weeks ago, and the overwhelming response at that time was it needs to stay in federal control because they just didn't trust the states to manage our federal lands properly. So for everybody's enjoyment and use. So this is a debate that can go on. It's something that we need to kind of follow up on. I know Backcountry Horseman is doing that. And I think people need to kind of go back and study their history and see what the purpose was for designating these lands as national lands. We could use the example of the Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee and what happened when it was in the hands of private people or states and the federal government came in. And now the Great Smoky Mountains are probably the most visited park system in the country today. And everybody's able to enjoy that and take advantage of it and use it. So quite a debate to keep up with. And you and I were talking the other day, Randy. I don't know that we'll see anything happen in the next 5 years or so, but it could. And but I think the big concern is, are these lands going to be available for our children and grandchildren to use and enjoy?
That's what, you know, concerns me the most. This is part of our national heritage. It's what makes America unique and the envy of nations across the world, quite frankly, that we have this system of public lands where we can go. I think it's, you know, ultimately it's a democratic thing where, you know, we have a vote in how public lands are managed in any state, and that's just distinctly American, and I hope my kids and grandkids can still have that same birthright, because to me that's what makes us unique.
It does. It does. Well, we have run out of time for today for this segment of the show. Always interesting conversation. I think probably this is something that we'll need to bring back up and talk about again. And I know that you're keeping your finger on what's going on, Randy, so we'll look for you for some great information on that.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to be on your show, Gary. Tina May, appreciate it.
And
thank you, Randy.
Tina May said you were lovely as always, so we're we didn't.
Thank you, Tina May.
We had to get that in there.
Yeah, well, we did. You brought that up before we started the program today, so I thought I'd throw that out. But anyway, always good to have you, Randy, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Bye, Randy.
All right. Well, it's always good to have Randy join us on the show and Jim McGarvey, and we look forward to continuing to have Backcountry Horsemen of America with us every first Tuesday of the month. And we want to remind folks that Saddle Up America is brought to you by Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. Learn more today at trailguard.org. And by Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. You can shop with them at trailheadsupply.com. And when we come back, we are going to be traveling to the Show Me State. We'll be talking with Rick Bousfield at Huckleberry Stables in Pineville, Missouri. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
The long roads, high lonesome prairies, dreaming of the springtime, first crocus in the snow, coffee in a go-cup, he's headed for the oil rig, land of shining mountains, Big Alberta sky. The old man and the castle, the red deer and the battle, rivers in a dry land feed the cities of the plain. Nothing lasts forever on the great divide, land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky. In the night, I have heard the thunder roll. In my day, the cowboy said, I wish I'd seen the buffalo. Maybe they'll come back again. He's gonna get up early, try and make a dollar. The only girl he wanted took the Greyhound for the coast, and she was bound to leave him, but she will not forget him or the land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky, the land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky.
Tyson's Land of Shining Mountains, and we are going to be traveling to a jewel of a location in Pineville, Arkansas, located right in the heart of the Huckleberry Ridge State Forest. And welcome to the show now, Mr. Rick Bosfield. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Welcome
Hi,
to the
Rick.
Show.
Hi, Dana. Well,
Gary,
thank you.
I got to correct you on that. That's Pineville, Missouri.
Pineville, Missouri. Excuse me. I don't know why I keep saying that, but I wrote it down wrong the other day.
It's close to Arkansas.
We're on the border. We're on the border, Gary, but we're in Missouri.
All right. The Show Me State. The Show Me State.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're looking forward to talking with you during this segment of the show today. A lot of really interesting information about you personally. And we want to talk about Huckleberry Stables, and then a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about a great event that's coming up next week. But, Tina May, when did you meet Rick?
Oh, my goodness. It was a few years ago at a charity ride, this Trails for Kids. And I just thought he was the neatest man and the humblest man I've ever met.
I don't know
just
about
that. Just love him to death. Absolutely. But Rick, to me, tell us about you and how you got started with horses, Rick. It's a wonderful story.
Well, I guess the first horse that I had, two of them, really wasn't mine. When I was about 13, I was raised over straight west of Sheldon, Missouri, on the old red dirt road. And a guy had a great big old woolly pasture next to us and had some cattle in there, and he lived about 20 miles from there. So he hired me to take care and watch over them cows and brought me a couple horses, and that was actually the first horses I ever had. And so that's how I really got acquainted with horses. When I was young, I was living with my grandfather, and he didn't like horses because he was raised with them, and they farmed with them, of course, you know, back then. And but any time we had cattle get out in the brush or the hogs get out in the brush, first thing he'd do is holler, "Ricky, I'll catch one of them blanky horses," you know. But that's kind of how I got started in the horse world. And then it just, I don't know. I've never been conventional my entire life. I just never was a time clock type person and stuff. I worked for Coca-Cola Bottling Company 8 hours one time, said, no, this ain't going to cut it. back in the mid-60s, and everybody was trying their best to get a job, and I got on a bus, came back home to Southwest Missouri out of Kansas City. And it just started from there. I got involved with a major saddle company and hauled horses and saddles and did saddle pick clinics all over the U.S. without any major Christmas shows in Vegas and Epitana, Denver several times, PBR finals. And then, I, of course, in the early years when I was first married, went back to Kansas City to make my fortune when me and my wife first got married, and ended up quitting the Union Pacific Railroad. And I worked for a few months and then went back into cattle, doing ranch work and different things, you know, worked for pretty big cattle outfits south of Kansas City up there.
Well, what'd you do with those, with the cattle outfits, Rick? Were you out buying and selling cows?
We used horses. Mainly my main job was taking care of the cows. Company had over 800 head of mama cows alone, not counting steers and stuff. That was before Kansas City drove way out to the south like it has now. And then the farm prices hit, you know, cattle weren't worth nothing. He was working for nothing. And ended up moving back down home, down by Nevada, Missouri. And landed a job. I did do underground tunneling for about a year and a half. There ain't too many people want to do that. And paid my farm off, so it made it easier on us.
Right.
That's when I went to work after that. As soon as I got that place paid for, I quit that job immediately because sometimes your life expectancy ain't real high on them. And that's when I got in the saddle industry and started the saddle industry.
How long were you involved in the saddle business when you were out traveling?
Well, I still am to a certain extent. 5-6 years. I've hauled horses all the way to West Virginia back there for a invitation-only trail ride that a oil and gas man put on back there. Senator Robert Byrd was even at the ride. Then after that, certain saddle company shut down. I'm involved with another one also right now that I'm kind of one of the deals in it. And then all this led to working in the country of Belize. A guy I sold several saddles to had a ranch in Belize. He had ranches all over the U.S. and kept trying to hire me to go to work for him. So eventually I did and ended up doing some rides, and I was more or less over the horse part of it, doing some trail rides out in the rainforest down in Belize, and did that for several years. We also, but that wasn't my only job. We had a bunch of cattle also in southern Mexico, and we would take cattle order buyers to Belize. To our lodge was the largest thatched roof building in the country of Belize. And then we would take them in a single-engine airplane up into southern Mexico and show them cattle. So that was part of my job, too.
Well, now let's go back to Belize just a minute and those trail rides down in the rainforest. Yeah, talk to us a little bit about what was that like.
Well, it you know, and nothing against the island over there, San Pedro and what have you, but where we were in the more northern part called Orange Walk District. And it was really the true Belize. It was the true Belize. We was inland away. We was just down from the Mayan ruins. One day, as a matter of fact, while you're there, we had our own boats. We was right on the river. And we would take in the boats up to the Mayan ruins. So one day while you're there. We also would haul a steel drum band in one night during your visit. And then I would take you out, and then I had local cowboys that would go with us also and point out different plants and different things on what they use different plants and things for out there. And also, one day while you were there, we was also in the water buffalo business.
Oh, wow.
We had probably over 2,000 head of water buffalo in northern Belize. At one time, we had 53 cowboys working for us. We had over 100 head of horses. And what it was is still we didn't have them. Most of them were not under wire. And we would pin them at night. And then the next morning, we would drive them to different sugarcane fields that was in layover. Sugarcane, you can raise it 7 years in a row, and then you have to rest it 7 years. And we would graze the water buffalo on the layover acres. And one day during your visit, you would go out with the cowboys and we'd herd water buffalo.
So what you were doing, you were taking the buyers from the States, and you were going and really showing a good time. You were entertaining them,
yeah,
down there.
Yeah, in Belize. And then we would have a Mexican pilot that worked for pick us up in Belize and fly us over Guatemala into southern Mexico and look at cattle.
Well, did you ever get into any situations while you were down there?
Well, no, not really. Of course, we're talking the mid-90s, Gary.
Okay.
Now, Belize, the Americans have bought a lot of land down there, and Belize is really the retirement place. You know, a lot of people now are actually moving to Belize.
Right, right.
When I was down there, you can kind of look some of this stuff up on the Internet, and like Orange Walk District, where we were, was related to like being back then the old West as we knew it here in the States,
uh-huh,
back in the turn of the century, you know,
right,
in the late
right.
1800s. Everybody still used a lot of horses and what have you there. And the water buffalo, we was processing them, send them to the supermarkets. They're very good if they're cooked right, and they're
uh-huh.
Lots of fat, saturated fat. The guy I worked for brought them, and a lot of people don't know this. At one time, we had over 800 head of water buffalo in northwest Arkansas.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And he started this by bringing them from Guam, and how he got started in Belize was that was the quarantine before he could bring them on into the U.S.
Well, that's quite a background and experience that you had there, and let's kind of move up to today, and talk
okay.
to us a little bit about how you acquired Huckleberry Stables. And what the purpose was for that.
Well, what it was, Gary, I was getting, you know, along in the years, longer in toots and what have you. And we owned that little piece of property. It's only 80 miles from our old home place, and we'd been coming down in this country riding a lot over the years, and we bought that little place to, it just had an old stone cabin to retire on. And I still had every intention. I was riding horses for other people and stuff and in the summers and still going back. I was going back to Belize to ride, and that's about when the Twin Towers hit.
Okay.
And my wife said, you know, enough's enough. So that's kind of what gave me the idea to do that. And also, when I was in the saddle business and everything, I had logos all over my trailer. When I would go somewhere, I'd end up working. So we'd always try to find the smallest deal we could find if just me and my wife wanted to go, you know.
Right, right.
And then we talked about the cabin deal for 15 years, looked down in Shannon County and Texas County, and then this little acreage came for sale, and we bought it. And then after Twin Towers, my wife said, all right, let's do the cabin deal, and or that, or don't bring it up again. We're done with it. And so they started building.
Well, it was time for you to quit doing all that flying and traveling after 9/11.
And Gary, so, to be honest with you, it's doing what I actually built it for. It's supplementing our Social Security.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That is great.
Needless to say, the life I've led doing all this stuff, I don't have 401ks, and I don't have these retirement checks from some big company, you know. So we enjoy it. We enjoy the people. We enjoy the people.
Well,
and the people enjoy you too, Rick.
Is it for everybody? No, of course not. You know, you don't do it for the money for it. And I know you've heard this 100 times. The best way to make $1 million in the horse business is start out with $2 million.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
That's right.
I know how that works. I know how that works.
That's right. Well, we're going to change pace on this a little bit, and we're going to talk about Huckleberry Stables. What kind of facilities do you have there, Rick?
Well, of course, we're online. You know, that's the deal anymore, at huckleberrystables.com. Our cabins are nice. They're clean. They're neat. They do not have the restrooms in them. Two of them, we have different models. We've only got 6 altogether. So two of them have sleeping lofts upstairs and the futons downstairs to make into a bed. They have, let me see, my wife's better too. Microwave ovens, coffee makers, refrigerators, of course, air, heat, ceiling fans, and furniture in them. And we have a centrally located shower restroom facility. For the guests, we have some barn stalls, and I'm not bragging, but it's a nice barn. And we also have open pens, you know, whichever people would prefer. And we have about 4 trailer hookups is all. We're not a great big deal, and never will be. And that's kind of, you know, we had this idea years ago that there would be people that want a little deal, you know.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And same way with the cabins, you know, yeah, we could have put bathrooms in them, but we'd had to charge twice of what we charge. We have models that run anywhere from $40
cabin
a night to $55. We furnish our bedding. Some places don't, but. And I'm sure that works fine, but my wife didn't, you know, we would rather have our bedding in there.
No, I've stayed in one of your cabins. It is a cute, nice little cabin.
Yeah.
You've got a
yeah, they're
cute
small,
little place.
They're patient. If it's, I just, you know, and it's on an old rocky hillside. And, you know, I just help you, you know, if you're looking for the Hilton, we're not it. I'm sorry. We just have a lot of fun.
Well, I tell you what, Rick, when we posted that we were going to be talking with you today and we shared that with social media, I had people that were making comments. They loved to come and ride with you. And a fellow that's back up here near Nashville, Jerry Carey, said, man, I'm making sure that I listen to that show. He said he was there about 5 years ago to stay with you, and he was going to listen in because he just loved his visit with you guys. So Tina May always likes to talk about the trails a little bit. Tina?
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I want to go ahead. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the trails, how many miles of trails you have. It's endless. And let's talk about those a little bit.
The miles, we really... You know, I'm not a GP man. We have three geocache things hit. I'm just a hider. I don't even have a machine. I don't know how to work them, and I ask people to take the readings. But we have people come for a week all the time as far as mileage, because we sit in the middle of Huckleberry, but we also ride a lot of private ranches and private properties that we have permission to use that enjoy horseback riders, you know. And it's typical Ozark riding. It's pretty rugged. We have people come, you know, to get their horses legged up for endurance rides. We have a lot of them come down to get ready to go elk hunting and get their mules and horses legged. It is rocky terrain. We have lots of scenic overlooks, you know, off of the top of the bluffs above Big Sugar Creek. We also have canoeing available right around the corner from us. We aren't on the water. I think our place price at the highest altitude in McDonald County. And the trails are marked some. There is some, you know, service roads, and we provide the maps or we ride all the time. People, you know, can go with us if they'd like, you know. There's no charge for if they want to ride with us. There's no charge for it. There's no trail fee and all that, you know. It's just kind of a down-home mom-and-pop deal. Right now, I'm sitting on top of a ridge right now, and the dogwoods are just opening up. The red buds are opening. We'll be on the run for the morel mushrooms here. We've been keeping an eye on them.
Oh, wow.
They should come out after this weekend.
Yes. Yes, they should. Mm-hmm. We have big mule rides. They come from all over Texas. One from Virginia isn't going to make it this year. One from Arizona that'll be kicking off this Thursday, our annual mule ride. And, of course, with friends, we ride with them in the winter down in Texas. I'm also, you know. And the thing of it, all our guests become very, very dear friends of ours. And so we're very blessed in that way of having so many friends from all over. And Gary mentioned Nashville. I have a real good friend that lives in Franklin, Tennessee, that we met through our cabin deal, that he travels doing different things at factories, speeding up the production, and he brings his horse when he's in this area and stays with us.
That's great. That is great. That is great. Well, you've got a nice setup there, and it's doing exactly what you wanted it to do, and that's to be small enough that people can come and enjoy themselves. And I would almost bet that in the evening somebody might prompt you to tell some of the stories about your time down in Belize and southern Mexico and some of these other places.
My wife has those plastic tub things full of pictures of my, what would you call it, adventures? Is that what
adventures
we want to go, Gary?
Yeah. Yeah.
Had quite the adventurous life.
I hate to call them jobs, because when I got ready to get Social Security, I told my buddies, I said, oh, man, it won't be long. I can be getting that retirement money. They said, retirement money? You ain't never had a real job long enough drawing retirement money. But she got pictures and albums put together of all this stuff, anything from cowboy Christmas shows in Vegas to, like you say, Belize. West Virginia. I packed one time. Well, I used to pack quite a bit. I tried to ride all the way around Truman Lake here in Missouri one time. And that, mm-hmm. it's a big lake. It don't look that big on the map. me and three other guys, and we run into too many obstacles. One was a tornado at Osceola, Missouri, and we was in the woods.
Oh,
and I thought, well,
oh my gracious.
I thought, well, we're going to die. but we made it through that and headed back to the trailer. It took 3 days to get back.
Oh, gosh.
We've got pictures of that and some of the stuff. I took some pictures on that expedition.
Oh, gracious.
Well, I'll tell you what. He's about as genuine gets, and he is a joy to be around. It's a treat just to go there and sit down and talk with Rick and his wife. Rick, tell us about some events that's coming up.
Well, we want to take just a quick break before we do that because we've got to pay some bills. And, there's some events
everybody's
that are coming up.
Them.
Everybody's got them. So, yeah, we got to take care of business. But anyway, we're going to be back and talk more with Rick and Tina May in just a second. But we want to acknowledge one of our great sponsors, and that's Trail Guard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance with unlimited vehicle towing to a dealership that services your make vehicle, a second tow vehicle to get your trailer and horses home or to your destination. 24-hour coverage for you and your vehicle, one you're driving or one anyone else is driving your vehicle, they're covered. 24-hour personal assistant to help plan your trip and much, much more. Trail Guard was founded with one mission in mind, and that's guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more today about Trail Guard at trailguard.org. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Rick. We're going to talk about a great event that's coming up next weekend, and it's called the Trails for Kids program. And we're going to listen to a song right now called Nothing in This Life by Bryn Hill. I thought it was very appropriate. Bryn wrote this song about his young son, Briggs, that was going through cancer treatments at the time. And when we can saddle up and ride for these kids, we need to do that. So we're going to be talking more about that trail ride that's coming up and remind you that you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, online at equestrianlegacy.net.
One day at a time, another round of chemo coming, it gets to be a grind. The sun's out, the springtime's coming, he wants to go outside. They say he may never walk again, but that's alright. Little sorrow mare called Jessie, a long way from home. The little boy she used to carry left her all alone. The sun's high over Franklin Canyon, she wants to go outside. Say he may never walk again, will ride. And they are too hard in need of something only they can provide. A cow horse and a little cowboy waiting to reunite. The will to live, the will to ride is a powerful. Nothing in this life worth doing that you can't do on a horse. get to be rich and famous hanging around with me. But I believe that God's a cowboy and that he understands a little boy so sick and tired needs a special friend. And they are two hearts in need of something only they can provide. A cow horse and her little cowboy waiting to reunite. The will to live, the will to ride, it's a powerful force. And there's nothing in this life worth doing that you can't do on a horse. Stem cells and radiation, another second chance. They say that life is that which happens while making other plans. My story has a happy ending for all the tears we've cried. You don't have to walk my be able to ride. And they are two hearts in need of something only they can provide. A cow horse and her little cowboy waiting to
in this life. And you know, there's nothing that we can do that's more important, I don't think, than to try to give back and do things for these kids. And Rick, you've got the 12th annual Trails for Kids ride that's coming up, and that's mm-hmm. April the 17th through the 19th at Craig O'Lee Campground. Tell us a little bit about how this got started and what it's for.
Okay. Some dear friends of ours named Chuck and Harriet Miller came up with this idea to have a trail ride to help our local cerebral palsy children's unit here. And it's for the Tri-County area. It's for the CP Center, Kids Center. All the proceeds that we bring in stays here at home at our Cerebral Palsy Children's Center. And so when I heard about the idea also, because, you know, we're good friends, I said, sure, I'll help. Of course I will. And there was about four or five of us dove in with both feet on this deal. And I've been married 49 years. I've been very, very blessed. We have four kids. And 12 grandkids, 6 great-grandkids, all of them just as healthy and ornery as they come, you know. We have one little great-granddaughter that was dealt a little bit of a bad hand. She was born deaf, and now she has cochlear implants and stuff. But if you was around her very long, you would definitely understand she does not have a disability, you know.
Right, right.
she's coming right along with that, and you throw her on a horse, can't get her back off of it.
There you go.
But anyway, that, and, you know, and it all makes sense to me, and I don't want anybody to take this wrong. There's a lot of wonderful, wonderful charities out there, but there's always something local that you can also do that you know, that you actually see it, Gary,
mm-hmm.
going
right.
on.
Right.
Like our event is. And we have an all-day ride on Saturday. I've led the all-day ride. We have short rides that go out and back for people that don't want the all-day deal, and they bring lunch to us. At a buddy of mine's, people's probably heard of him, his name's Doug Hall. He's a nationally known oil painter that lives up a holler here by us in a log
right.
cabin. And they bring lunch to us there on the all-day ride. On one night, on Friday night, we have karaoke for everybody. We have a baked good option on Friday night that people buy the baked goods, and of course it's a donation. I've gave $130 for a pan of cinnamon rolls, you know what I'm saying, you know.
Best darn cinnamon rolls you ever had.
That's right. And my neighbor across the road, the one that cooked them, I could have walked by my mailbox and got them. But no, that, you know, it ain't about, it's just everybody has really opened up. All our local businesses too, by the way, not so much, nothing against chain stores. I don't want to get anybody's feathers ruffled. But it's
right.
mainly our small local businesses that donate year after year after year, you know, for our options. On Saturday, like I say, we have the organized trail rides, the all day and the shorter ones. And then we have a duck race that you buy a plastic duck, and we haul them all up the creek, turn them loose.
There you
go. And have a finish line with your number, and if your duck crosses first, you win half the pot, and the kids get the other half.
There you go.
At the duck race, and then we have a huge auction on Saturday night with just everything under the sun, mainly horse items, but not all horse items, you know, just everything that businesses have donated. And also you get pledge packets. You can win a brand new saddle. JR's Western Store is one of our corporate sponsors. I'm sure there's a lot of them out there heard of JR's Western Store, and they're mm-hmm. a great, great company. And then on Saturday night, we have Kenzie Sadler, a Nashville recording artist, in concert there. And that's included. But your price of admission, the minimum's $15 per person for the whole deal, the whole weekend and stuff. Down at Craggy Lee, they're on our website, and so's Trails for Kids, Gary. If people go to our website at huckleberrystables.com, and the Trails for Kids and the Craggy Lee Campground is on our website.
All right, and you've got a nice website, and I have been to it and checked out the Trails for Kids program and Craggy Lee, and so it's just a great benefit, and that's coming up this next weekend. So do
yes,
people need to make reservations? Yeah, do people
yes,
need to make reservations?
Yes, they need to call. Yes.
Okay, and so all that information would be on the website, so they can do
yes.
that there. All right,
mm-hmm.
And you've got another event that I thought was interesting that takes place in Pineville in August, and that's Jesse James Days. What is that?
Jesse James Days is in 1938. there was a Jesse James movie filmed here at Pineville with Henry Fonda, Tyrone Powers, and Nancy Kelly.
Yeah,
and they
I've seen that
the
movie.
Ozarks down here. The black and white. That was filmed right here. I can ride you right in that cave where their hideout was.
Yeah.
And it is in, it's in celebration of that movie. And the, why that movie was such a big deal back then is, as a matter of fact, if you notify our Chamber of Commerce here, they can get you some souvenir copy newspapers of the movie. Was because that was, if you stop and think, that was during the real bad times in the Depression area. And there was no telling how many farms and businesses saved that the bank was going to get until that movie came to Pineville.
Wow. Wow. So
and
it had
people
quite an impact.
Housing people. They was housing people in their homes, and all the businesses with, you know, the stores and stuff was doing a land offer business, and it just saved no telling how much, you know, farms and stuff that people was going to lose if it hadn't been for that movie coming.
Wow. Wow, wow. Well, you know, Rick, we do a weekend at the movies on our website at EquestrianLegacy.net. And it has been just a few months ago that we actually featured that movie as our weekend feature. So, yeah, it was a great movie, and I didn't know where that was filmed, but now I do.
The yellow mare in that movie belonged to a guy here, local named Mike Ellip. He's passed away now, but I knew Mike very well. And it's kind of a funny story. He leased that yellow mare to the movie company Jesse was riding for $1 a day for 13 days. And,
oh, wow.
And
that's
then
a lot
he
of
also,
money.
They had a pasture next to where they was filming all this, Gary, and he was charging, I think, a dime or something for people to park to watch this movie being made. And he told me, he said, Rick, I made more money on that movie that year than anybody else did working that whole year.
Smart man.
Gosh. Well, I tell you what, I may have to pull that one back out of the files and feature that one again this weekend. That'd be cool.
The old barn in that movie, we ride right past it. That's down where Craggily Camp is at, the old barn that's in that movie.
Wow.
And the hideout is right across the creek from there.
Well, now what do they do during Jesse James days?
Jesse James days, we have a big parade. The town square, of course, is full of booths and farmers market, and it's the volunteer fire department, Gary, that started this, and the proceeds go to help our fire department.
Oh, that's great. That is great.
One more little old quip on this and on that movie. Where the movie was being filmed, Gary, this lady, I forget what the name of the farm was, but you can look a lot of this stuff, Google and all that stuff, had a bunch of guineas. And, of course, the movie producer wanted them guineas out there. You know how loud they are.
All right.
And so he bought them from this lady and paid her for them and told her to take them into meat market. The lady would take the guineas into the meat market. And then later in the night, during the night, the butcher man, the meat market guy, would take two or three back out to her. And that guy and the producer thought he didn't get all of them, so come find out before he caught on, he had bought some guineas about three times.
gosh,
that's funny.
That is a great story. That is a great story. Well, I could use guineas. They're great for ticks. I mean, they'll eat those ticks up. So yeah, they're good for that.
They're good alarm too.
Yeah, they really are.
They are.
Well, that's a great thing that's going on up there, and Huckleberry Stables. And Rick, it's a place you need to visit, and you need to sit down and just visit with Rick, because I'm sure that there will be so many stories like this one that you'd love to hear him talk about, and his days down in Belize and Mexico, and probably some other stories that we haven't even touched on over this amazing man's life and the different careers. And 8 hours at Coke, huh?
Do what, Gary?
Eight hours at Coke. Yeah.
Oh, no. That was when during they were still in the bottle pop era.
Right.
And I was in the basement on a putting empty Coke cases on a conveyor belt. I started to leave at noon, and I thought, oh, come on. You can do this 8 hours. And I told the floor supervisor, I said, I ain't going to be back tomorrow. He started to get angry with me about laying off. I said, man, you don't even owe me nothing.
Gosh, that's great. That is great. Well, we want to encourage everybody to visit huckleberrystables.com and plan a trip to visit with Rick and his wife and enjoy those trails that are right there in the heart of the Huckleberry Ridge State Forest there in Pineville, Missouri. How many people in Pineville? How large a town is that?
I think we're up to 700-something.
Yeah.
700 and something. Yeah. Don't blink,
well,
you'll miss it.
Any traffic lights? Any traffic lights in town?
One out there on what we call business 71. 71 used to go right through it. Now it's out there about a mile and a half out of town, but we still got the traffic light.
Oh gosh, and only a couple hours away from Branson. So I mean, a great place to visit.
Yeah.
I guess you could kind of headquarter from Huckleberry Stables and drive over to Branson.
We have people. We take care of their horses. We watch their horses while they're gone, you know, sightseeing or canoeing. We have a lot of attractions in northwest Arkansas, Bluff Dwellers Caves not far from us. We have a new restaurant just opened up, and it's actually in a cave.
Oh, wow. That is neat.
It's called
the
Cave Bar and Grill. And they're by us, 10 mile premise.
That is neat.
I just want to say one more thing. Anybody, anytime that can help, try to help these kids that's been dealt a bad hand in life, but those kids are taking it head on with their, you know, their shoulders spread. And try to help your local kids that's been dealt a little bad hand, that they got a smile on their face, taking it head on, and we should too.
Well, I appreciate that, and thanks for what you do. And Rick, thanks for spending time with us today, and look forward to talking to you again back down the trail somewhere.
You bet, Gary. Thank you. Thank you, Tina. Bye, Tina.
Thank you, Rick. And you know what? I think I might be able to change my schedule. I'm hoping to be down there and see you and get on that ride. It's a good ride for a great cause.
Yeah. Give us a holler.
All right. Well, thanks, Rick, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. And we are going to – thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. I think we're going to close this segment with Rick with a great song by Marianne Kennedy, and it's kind of appropriate. It's called Who Saved Who. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online, and we'll be back to talk with Tina May in just a moment.
Looking for someone to call your own. Then right before your eyes, an open heart wants to be your home. Unwanted, unneeded, now there is love. Thank you. how your fate can change in just one day. No matter who you are, life is better when you share the way. I ask you, who rescued, who needed more?
Travel assistance, founded with one mission in mind, Trail Guard guards you down life's trails. You can learn more about them at trailguard.org and by Trailhead Supply, your full-service online horse packing supply store. Shop with Trailhead Supply online at trailheadsupply.com. And Tina, I want to say we appreciate having Randy Rasmussen with Backcountry Horsemen on. That's a great mm-hmm. topic of discussion that we had, and I'm sure we'll follow back up on that. And I could sit down, I think, and just visit with Rick for hours on end and let him tell his stories.
Oh, he's a joy. And he is so genuine and down to earth. I just love the man. He's just awesome.
Well, we want to encourage people to visit his website, huckleberrystables.com, and put him on your bucket list and go visit and ride those trails in the Ozarks. And visit the town of Pineville. You can see where that movie was made, and I'm going to see if I can get that one back up for the weekend. That'd be kind of fun to watch again.
I would like to watch that. Yes, I would love to watch. I've rode down there at Pineville, and I rode to his charity ride. It's very well worth the trip. It's a great ride, great cause, and a beautiful, beautiful place to ride.
It is. It is. And when I watch the movie, I'll be able to kind of relate a little bit better to some of the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
certainly will be able to relate to that Palomino horse that Jesse's riding. So anyway, a lot of fun talking with Rick. Tell us about our Legacy Club.
Ooh, yes. Our Legacy Club membership is free. The benefits are discounts and promos from a Legacy Club sponsor, select campgrounds, dude ranches, and Western vacations. As a Legacy Club member, you are automatically entered into our free prize drawing, like our end-of-the-year prize of a 2-horse Hydro Horse watering system for your horses from our premier sponsor, Hydro Horse, and our monthly prize drawings, like this month's $100 gift certificate from our select sponsor, Tucker Tack. You can sign up to be a Legacy Club member at equestrianlegacy.net.
All right, so just visit our website at equestrianlegacy.net, enroll in our free Legacy Club, and you can start saving right away. You know, last night I was just sitting back, Tina May, and thinking about the shows that we have on Equestrian Legacy Radio, and the host and the co-host that I have that are part of our family. And Belinda Gale just won another Female Artist of the Year award from the Academy of Western Music last week, or week before last, I guess that was now.
Congratulations, Belinda. Well deserved.
Yeah, so Belinda is such a talented lady and such a great artist and so big-hearted. And then we've got Bobby Jean Bell that is part of the family for the Campfire Cafe, and she does a great job of promoting the Western lifestyle, and they put on that Out West concert series once a month out in Santa Clarita, California, and a great advocate there. And then we've got Tina Mae Weber. I mean, what can I say about Tina May? You know, a trail rider, but she's got a great line of camp kitchens that she's created to help trail riders, you know, make things easier when you're out on the trail. And then you've got that brand new saddle from Circle Y that's out. And you can visit the general store on our website and connect and find out more about those saddles and the camp kitchen. But I was just thinking about all these talented people that are part of our family. And then I looked at myself and I thought, Nay, what am I bringing to the table? So I guess...
You put Equestrian Legacy Radio together.
Well, I think it's the fact that I have such great people that are around me. And so it makes it a lot of fun. And I hope that our audience is enjoying the shows that we bring. Saddle Up America on Tuesdays, Campfire Cafe on Thursdays. We do Saddle Up Saturdays now on Saturday mornings. And then, of course, Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Sunday mornings. So just a lot of great things that we have going on. And as Rick was talking about people stepping up and doing things to help the kids, you know, I have to talk about our trail riding benefit for the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation. And that takes place the first weekend in June, June 4th through the 7th. And we're going to have 120 miles of great trails to ride on. We've got Cowboy Up Ball on Thursday. We have concerts with Templeton Thompson and Stephanie Lane and the Sawdust Brothers on Friday. And, of course, Michael Martin Murphy on Saturday night. And then we wrap things up with Cowboy Church on Sunday morning with Mike and Doris Merritt and my brother Wayne Holt that will be putting on that service. We've got Craig Cameron's Extreme Cowboy Competition. Their national championship is part of our event this year. And we're going to have vendors there with everything for the horse lovers. So if you want to come do some shopping, and you can do all of that for a $50 donation to the foundation to help kids. And yeah, I mean, it's so great. I have another child that I found out that we were able to help with money we raised from last year, 9 months old. And he's going to have to he has to wear a helmet. I mean, you know, and he can't get it. Single mama and on Medicare, and Medicare won't pay for that. So we're providing that couple of $1,000s for a helmet for this child. And it's all because of the generosity of our sponsors, our vendors, our trail riders, the Extreme Cowboy folks, people that are coming out and helping support the cause. And so visit our website at equestrianlegacy.net and find out more about that. But come for all of it, come for part of it, come for the concerts, whatever. Just come out and help us raise some money to help these kids. So anyway, a fun show today. A lot of interesting
informative
folks,
show.
Interesting. Informative show, and visit bcha.org or .com or just Google BCHA, Backcountry Horsemen of America. I think it's Backcountry Horse is the way that the website is, and find out more about how you can get involved with them and kind of keep up with some things that are going on with our trails across the country. So, yeah, do that. Any final thoughts, young lady?
Well, I just you pretty well covered it. I just wanted to encourage people to go to the Backcountry Horsemen of America's website, keep up with what's going on, the changes that are out there or trying to be out there, and just stay up with everything. And check out your local areas. There's a local charity ride in your area. Go to it. support a good cause and have fun doing it.
All right. All right. Well, it's been a fun show. Always fun to have you join me on the show. And we want to remind folks, as always, if you climb in the saddle,
get ready for the ride.
Get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Rodeo. Radio. Could be a rodeo. Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. And we'll close the show out today with a great song from Templeton Thompson, Ride Before It Rains. Thanks for listening.
Before.